We're continuing in lesson two. We're about to enter into the class discussion. We talked about, we were finishing up last week, the first part of lesson two, and we were talking about the article, and I listed in the article, in the outline, just the kind of the high points of the article, the main topics, about how maturity will respond in marriage. And we pointed out that when you become married, you're no longer independent. You're thinking for two, not just one. We talked about the mature attitude toward the sexual relationship and how that is something that requires communication. People are different, and your idea is to give and to provide for one's needs. And those things change, like a lot of things in time. As you get older, as circumstances change. So communication, a giving. We talked about, and this is where we left off, but we're going to really pull this into our discussion. But we'll just kind of hit the highlights here. But again, you need to have the ability to seek your companion's happiness as diligently as you seek your own. And I will tell you, one of the problems is a common problem in marriage is us guys. If we are successful and busy at work, it's easy for us to get involved in that work and be happy and come home and we just kind of want to just to kind of rest and don't want to talk about anything and we can become very separate. You know, and a man, and we'll talk later about the needs of a man in another study, but a man can be very satisfied with work. He accomplishes things, he receives praise, and he can walk away from it. And man may not realize the needs of the wife. The needs of the wife is to communicate and talk. And so, you know, when we first come in from work, by the way, women, when we first come in from work, as a rule, don't try to give us the talk. You know, give us a little time to chill out, you know, to go to our cave and relax a little bit, and then we can come out and talk. But guys, we need that time to come out and talk. It's quite interesting as you look at how we're put together. It's easy for a man to be satisfied and live in his own world and then come home and they just want to crash and they don't want to do anything. They want to talk. And you can be two people doing separate directions living in the same house, particularly with their children. And so it's really important that you seek the other's happiness. And therefore you need to know what's going on in their world. And we need to understand some of the differences in men and women. I'll be talking about some of these differences in men and women in the class coming this next Saturday night at our house, where we're trying to go into some areas that go outside just Bible study and talking about, I think, some tools about differences. We talk about differences in personality. And we'll try to talk about differences in men and women this Saturday night. Lord willing, got to get that material together. But the point in marriage is you listen and you learn. You cannot just get into your own world. And guys, we can do that, particularly with a good job. Buddy, we can go out there and immerse ourselves in that, and that is our world. And we become a little contributor to the home. We just kind of pass by and see the show, and we want that show to be happy. We don't want any problems. You know what some men do when there's problems? They work more hours. If there's problems in the home. And so, you know, of course, in the world, you read about the guy that he finishes work, he goes to the bar. Spends a lot of time there, then comes at home. You see, and that's one of the dangers why we've got to make sure we're communicating. Women may not realize it, but you can, by complaining, push the husband away. And where, you know, you can end up in a situation where you're repelling one another. But if you're a Christian, and guys, this comes to you first, things aren't happy in the home, it's my problem, it's your problem. And we need to stand up and step up and make sure we don't end up with two strangers living in the same house, living in two worlds, occasionally saying hi. And so that's a real challenge to all of us, particularly, I mean, if things go stressful at work. And just a couple of verses. Ephesians 5:25, husbands, love your wife just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her. Christ just gave us the salvation and then just ran away and left us, right? No. He saved us in order to continue to mold us and work with us. Ephesians 5:28-29, so husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself, For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth it, just as the Lord does the church. You see, in marriage, two have to become one. And it's a battle. It's a battle. Now you can substitute some things. We can be very busy and occasionally say hi. But that's not what God wants in marriage. He wants us to be together, to be one. And Ephesians 5:33, nevertheless, let each one of you in particular so love his own wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. Again, I'm jumping ahead in material here. But women, one of the greatest things you can do for your husband is to respect them. We are kind of like warriors. We like to go and achieve and accomplish. We like to fix things. And, you know, when having a measure of respect and praise when we do something that is good, it gives us strength. We need that. You know, you could have a husband in a bad job where things aren't going well and they're beat up. Coming to a home where there is respect, and I'm not saying flattery, but that is a great need of the husband. The wife's greatest need is love and communication. The husband's greatest need is praise and respect. In some ways, if you're familiar with the Star Trek series, sometimes we're like Klingons, you know. We want respect. We're warriors, you know. And that's part of how God made us. We want to achieve and accomplish. And again, from a woman's standpoint, you know, it's not always the complaints and the pointing out the faults that's going to get the husband to respond. You know, remember when we talk about relationships, I'm jumping back to the class on Saturday night, we're going to bring this material here in this class, but in relationships, you provide for one another's needs. And so when I understand my husband needs this or my wife needs this, it's not something I would need. You know, I don't really need to come home and talk. That's not exactly how I'm put together. But if my wife needs that, then I'm going to help there. And again, from a woman's standpoint, you may not realize that a husband being built up makes you want to be closer to you, spend more time with you. So again, I'm introducing some things, and I want to continue on. Here's another area, and I'm going to take a different angle from the article, but it's really important. We need to have the ability to live up to commitments. Let me ask you this. A husband, a father, what are some things a man is to do in the home, in that relationship? What's some of his primary responsibilities versus the woman's primary responsibilities?
Spiritual leadership.
What's that?
Spiritual leadership.
Spiritual leadership, number one. I agree. It's leader. What else?
You've got to provide.
You got to provide. Now, I want to tell you something I'm saying. I'm saying this in church. And I'm not necessarily saying we got any problems here with our folks, but our people, but I'm saying we teach our children, you know, we're seeing in our society the role of men turned upside down. I had to deal with two situations in Virginia where the man stayed at home and sometimes stayed with the children, sometimes he just stayed at home and let his wife work. His wife made more money. And he didn't see a point in going out and continuing working as a in a dealership in a particular role. And that is an enormous problem. I'm not saying that it's scriptural for a wife to work, and we could talk about that. But what was happening, I know this one case, the wife was grieved over it, and certainly her parents were grieved over it. What about children? I know another situation where a man stayed at home with the children because the wife had a great job within the State Department or something and made all this money. He couldn't possibly make that much. There's something wrong with that, in my view. A man needs to be the provider. And again, one of the problems we're seeing is an immaturity, and sometimes the man just doesn't work. Now, what you see in some minority communities, and certainly not just with minority, but they're very dominant in minority communities, the man's just not there. There's children out of wedlock, and he drifts on, and there's in the neighborhood I grew up in now, there's a 92% illegitimacy rate. And so there is a strong cultural trend going on, where the role of men is being attacked, and you're having now homes without men. So as we teach our children, we need to teach the men are to be providers. The primary role for the woman is to be a homemaker and to be there for those children and raise those children. And if a woman works full-time, she's doing two full-time jobs. Not saying it's a woman cannot work, but we need to understand the roles of men and women, and there's tremendous pressure in these areas. Comments? All right. That looks like not in the outline, but it is. If I see things, and I see trends popping up in the church, this is one big one. And you know, and what if a guy doesn't work? Well, you know, you need to marry a Christian. You need to marry a Christian who's committed to God's will. And that's a bad situation. You'll find situations where men won't do what they ought to do, and woman's got to. Woman almost has to provide the spiritual leadership. A woman ends up having to provide for the home. It's a terrible situation, in my view, when that happens. Okay, again, I'm going to... And then the last point is the ability to understand and accept authority. Why is that important for the man and the woman to understand and accept authority? What is a Christian? One who has submitted to the Lord. And if you're a Christian, you understand and you accept authority. If you're a faithful Christian, you know about that. And then that goes into the realm of work. It goes into the realm of the home. It goes into every realm. God has an order. And, you know, again, a person that respects God, and here I am to submit, then I submit in this situation. You don't accept God's order of authority, you end up with a mess. Let's talk some. We need to get the pump primed here. Let's do a little bit of talking and see what we studied so far. Okay, what kind of changes must occur in our thinking when we lead the single life and marry? Make sure that our mate gives us what we need, right? That's what we've got to make sure, right?
Start thinking of somebody else.
Got to think of somebody else. Well, that's what I was saying, that they will provide for us, that we make sure they do that. No, go ahead. We're unselfish. Kind of like, how do you have to think for two? Tell me some things. Can't just go out anytime you want to, go eat or buy something. What might be, you know, I'm going to buy a new car and say, hey, I'm going to bring a new car home, honey. Why don't you look at it? Is that how we did that? Hey, we're going to move to San Francisco tomorrow. Got a new job. Hey. Okay, you guys think for two. Okay. All right. What must occur in the heart of one who is converted to Christ? You're a Christian.
Submit to Christ.
What?
Yeah, submit to Christ.
What does that mean?
We give up ourselves.
We do. We're crucified to Christ. We take up our cross daily. So that ought to be part of us. If we're really genuinely a mature Christian, that's one of the problems sometimes. We've never matured in faith. When we think of being servant, it's something like, oh, you know, I'm... Okay. How does our relationship to God greatly prepare us for marriage? What did Jesus say about what his disciples are going to be characterized by? We're going to be rulers, right?
Sir.
Going to be servants. There's an article that I put in the bulletin several months ago. Great, Steve Klein. I like his writings. You'll see that in a lot of our bulletins, Steve Klein articles. But it's titled, Winning Last Place. You're interested in winning last place? If you are as a Christian, we're not talking about being haphazard and slothful. We're talking about winning last place on purpose. That's hard. I don't have that lesson down real well. I need to. But when you do that, when you win last place, then you're thinking of others. And certainly you'll be characterized by that in the home. Many times I get a chance to talk with other men and talk about the home. One of the things I tell them, you know, get involved with your home. Get involved with your children. Find out what they're doing. Be a part of their lives. Be a servant. Don't be thinking about yourself. Certainly rejoice in the good things you have. But you see, when you start thinking like Christ, Christ thinks about us. And He provides for us. And so again, our following Jesus as an example is going to be a tremendous benefit. Okay, how does an immature child act and think? You know, I mean, Emily at 2 years old would clean up her bedroom and make her bed every day. No. She won't do that now, but anyway, we will. Anyway, that's a struggle. But, okay, how does an immature child act and think? And we're not saying that it's abnormal or wrong for a child to act this way. But what's some of the characteristics? We talked about this last week. What's a child do?
Self-centered. Serves their own needs.
Yeah. And? Give me some more characteristics. You can just look at that line, by the way, if you just want to help on page one. I've got some listed. But what does a child do? That's right. It's mine. I love when Emily was younger, we'd be at the store or something. Daddy, I need this. I always like that emphasis. I need this. And so I remember that as a kid. That was one of my goals. Went away with mother to the store. Okay, can we get some money spent today? You know, can we do that? Oh yeah, it was really good. It was always the excitement. It was kind of like the battle, you know. You find something and please, oh, this is so good, you know. So I remember that. It was the excitement of going to the store as a kid. Can we get something? Alright, what else? Some characteristics of immaturity.
I never get anything.
Yeah. Don't have anything. How about, and of course when you do give them something, it's like, you know, I used to thank my mother after every meal for cooking for me. No, didn't do that. Matter of fact, sometimes the only time she heard something, we didn't like it, something, you know. And so there's a lack of gratitude, you know, immaturity. Children make great judgment in terms of, if you let them, let's say, you know, I love the old Bill Cosby, some of the old Bill Cosby things where he was, his wife made him get up and feed the kids. And you know what the kids wanted for breakfast? The chocolate cake, you know. And Cosby, well, it's got eggs in it. It's got milk in it. And it's a chocolate cake for you. And, you know, and so. And then he ended up, the mother found out about it and sent him back to bed. Of course, that's what he wanted in the first place, you know. That's one of the hidden things about us guys. If we really don't want to do something, mess it up. And you won't have to ask to do it again. I've got it trained to the point where, if she's on the trip, now she's learned better now, but I'd say, I'm doing the wash. No! You know, you got to mix the red in, put some bleach in there with the white. Do that a few times. And she'll never ask you to do wash again. So anyway, it's interesting. What happens if one is immature in marriage? Suffering can make you mature, you know. But, you could end up, you'll end up with having to work through all that, hopefully. And so, this is a real challenge. And again, now, you know, maturity, again, we're raising children. We're thinking about our children, preparing them for marriage. So the issues of maturity are very important in trying to help them. Yes?
No, I see that as one of the greatest challenges of parenthood. Is teaching your children to yield to the authority of, well, you're teaching them to yield to your authority.
Yes.
You're shaping them to be Christians.
Yes.
And yielding to the authority of God someday. Yes. So if you slack on those things, then they're not just going to pop out of it once they get married or once they go off to college or any of those things. If we slack on our teaching them to yield to authority, to serve one another, to be thankful. If we slack on those things, then our kids are going to learn that, and they're going to live that way.
You're right. And one of the things as a parent, I really mean this, and that's this has driven, I know Yvette and I in our attempts and our attempts to, and we need a lot of help. But we in our working with our children, their concept of God is going to derive from our relationship with them. You think about that. That doesn't humble you. And, you know, you have a good relationship and you've got both husband and wife working together, then that's how you're going to teach them about God, is again in your own attitudes and actions. And so that's very humbling. But you're right. is absolutely right. Okay, what other relationships change when one marries?
Parent child.
What's that?
Parent child.
It does. Or it does? And that's the challenge. And that's a struggle I've seen, and that is a big problem. And we talk about this a little bit, but I know that what does the wife think of a husband who they talk about a decision and they want to make a decision, and then the husband talks to his parents and they make it, and then he makes another decision? What does that do to the marriage? What's that?
Poison.
What happens is that you end up thinking, well, he cares more about his parents than he does for me. Now, women could have a good relationship. As a matter of fact, you'll find the daughter-mother relationship, even after marriage, to be a very powerful one, guys, and I'll talk to guys about this. That's different than us with our fathers. It really is. It's a very tight, important relationship. But one of the worst things you can do, if you talk to your mother, woman, wife, and what do you end up talking about? Well, that's one of the things that's just not going to help. If you spend a lot of time talking about what?
The things he does wrong.
Yeah. That's right. That's not wise. You can end up, you know, that's where you end up with the famous reputation of the mother-in-law, you know. But it's not good, because what you're doing, and let's say it's your child in the marriage, and talking about, and I'm not saying that we can't talk about faults or weaknesses in the home, but I'm talking about just good old complaining and fussing. And just getting to the point where you just tear them down, you're contributing to poisoning that relationship. I wished I had never seen this, but there was a situation years ago at a congregation I was at where the man committed adultery on his wife. And he was actually getting ready to leave her and change his mind. The wife knew something was wrong, but she didn't know what. He became so obsessed with being caught, he tapped the phone of his home and recorded the conversations between his wife and his mother-in-law. And he became a crazy man. And the crazier he got, the worse those conversations got. And he was hiding it. I ended up being the one to start working with him and finally got him to finally fess up to what he did. It's very interesting. Somebody gets in sin, and it's fascinating. He sinned against his wife. But you know how he covered up his guilt? Being enraged at her. But anyway, I'll end the story there. It got worse. It got more bizarre. But again, you know, we need to be careful with our tongues and our thoughts. Is it wrong to talk to another person about the faults of another? Not necessarily. But what's your goal? What's your goal? Are you going to try to help? Or are you just trying to rejoice in the misfortunes and the weakness of another? You see, you can inject poison into your home. Because I'll tell you what, my wife knows my weaknesses, and I have them, and they are legion. And if she chose to focus on them and build up on them, then, you know, she'll always have material. But it would go work the other way, too. You know, there's a point in marriage where you're trying to make it work, and you're trying to go forward. Matter of fact, it's true in the local congregation. It's quite interesting. We talk about how we deal with marriage, and how we deal with the local congregation, how we deal with our problems in a church. What happens when one or both mates allow outside influences to become a higher priority than their mate? And I think we've answered that. But what happens? The mate concludes what? They're not number one. And so you don't want to have that happen. How should we think about happiness and contentment in the home? What's the old saying at poor folks' restaurant? If mama's not happy, nobody's happy. You know, and that's probably true. And but what we try to do, we think of the happiness of another first, particularly as a man. Something messed up. I can't always fix it, but I'm going to know what's going on, and I'm going to try to be very involved. I'm going to step up as a leader and know. I try to seek the happiness of another. And finally, what happens when one consistently does not live up to their commitments? They get to go to bed and mother has to prepare breakfast. Going back to that illustration, but you get to do what you want to do. But no, actually what happens there is that there's a lack of loss of respect, and there's not a trust. There's not a trust. And that's something that's critically needed in the home. Oh, I brought the wrong PowerPoint. We're not going to get PowerPoint on the second part. We'll have to look at outlines. Man, can you imagine that? Okay. All right. I like the PowerPoint. I'm sure y'all do too. Let's go to Roman number 2 if we could. And some of this is repetitive. And like I said, we may want to move through this one fairly quickly. I'll talk about the man and woman here. We've actually talked about that a little bit. Let's talk about the man being ahead. The man will be a loving head. Somebody just tell me. We can look at Scripture. The Bible says that, you know, the wife is the head of the home, that the wife is Christ's love of the church. What does it mean for man to be head? We could have put 1 Corinthians 11:3 in there about headship. But in your own words, the husband is head. What does it mean?
Leader, but not dictator.
Okay. And what's the difference?
A true leader will consider those he is leading, or a dictator does what he wants to do.
Yes. I was at a congregation once, more than once, but fairly recently, I was at a congregation of elders. As an evangelist, I'd submit to my elders. Some issues came up with the elders, health problems and other things, but the last 2 or 3 years there, we almost never met. That drove me crazy. They were the head, they were leaders. And I told Yvette later, I said, wow, I know now what a wife feels like when the husband just goes over and does other things and there's no communication. It really was quite interesting when you're in that arrangement. From the other side, you're to submit. So as a head, I'm the lead, I'm the communicate. And we've already talked about the me first arrangement. Let's look at Romans 15:1-3, a verse we haven't looked at that would talk about this principle. Romans 15:1-3. And here it talks about how we work as a local church. You will find, brethren, how the home operates will have an impact on the local church. I see people misbehaving and acting in ways they ought not knowing how to go through a decision-making process and working with maturity on problems. That sometimes will tell me a little bit about their home. Not always. But you find somebody makes a mess of their home, they can make a mess of church. And sometimes, you don't always know what's going on in the home. But here in the church, look at Romans 15:1-3. We then who are strong ought to bear with the scruples of the weak and not to please ourselves. Let each of us please his neighbor for his good, leading to edification. For even Christ did not please himself. But as it is written, the reproaches of those who reproached you fell on me. Look at this verse in Romans 15:1. Does anybody got another translation other than the New King James? What you got on verse? Read verse 1.
We who are strong have an obligation to bear with the failings of the weak and not to please ourselves.
What translation you got there?
ESV.
Okay, that's a good one for the home, isn't it? You got to deal with the failings. Now, what do you do with the scruples? And the idea of scruples is opinions. Opinions that are different, and you know they're wrong. You know, of course, in this context, of some people being more restrictive than the Bible is, they didn't think they could eat meat. What do you do with those differences? You put up with them for a while till you straighten them out, right? No. There are going to be some things we're very different on. Now, Yvette is a rule keeper to a great degree. Did you know if we're going in a parking lot and there's no cars in the parking lot, I've got to go where the arrows are pointing. I always follow that. Sometimes I get into her stuff, and there's a certain way to put things up. We all have our areas of difference, don't we? And we all have ways we deal with things. And so, in this context, how long does it take till we straighten them out? In this context, if there are things that are not sinful, there are things we bear with and understand. I mean, really, marriage would be pretty dull if we were all were just exist alike, frankly. Yes.
Now, Walker said a minute ago about the head being the leader, not necessarily the dictator. I thought about the analogy of the head to the body, how I enjoy playing basketball, but my ankles are probably the weakest part of my body. But I can't just cut off my feet. I have to nourish my ankles to the point to where I can get them as strong as they can be so that I can play. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to at all. So instead of breaking down further or even cutting off the weak, we have to nourish them to the best that we can.
Understanding of working together. So there's a lot of differences. I mean, my wife looked at things very different than me, and that gets back to our personality studies and some of the things we did the other night. But, understanding that helps a lot. And I appreciate that. And frankly, I can say I wouldn't want her to change in those areas. Sometimes it's demanded. If we're working together, it's like, the neat bug, the perfectionist, and kids come along. Well, guess what? You're going to have to learn about imperfection and learning how to manage that. Now, guys, what does the Lord tell us to major in? Look at 1 Peter 3:7. This is not our natural strength, honestly, as a rule. It's not mine. And so, what am I to major in? I'm the head, that's right. But 1 Peter 3:7. By the way, is the bell on yet? Okay, good. All right, 1 Peter 3:7. Who'd like to read for me? Okay.
Likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life.
Okay, what's the husband to major in here?
Understanding.
What? It's like me only knowing addition and trying to work calculus. To understand my wife? No. Yeah, well, that's right. That's right. We just not saying that we ever gain perfect understanding, But why do we need that, guys? Don't we just naturally know how people think? Like I told you earlier about my wife, with the parking lot and the arrows and things like that. Yeah, we're different. And we're constantly changing. And our tendency, guys, we're the warriors. We can go out here and accomplish. Let us fix things. Let us conquer. And we feel like the world is great. Understanding? Well, it's not as easy. Therefore, the Lord's telling us, okay, guys, major in understanding. You got to, and how do you understand your wife? Really? We have to do that. Yvette and I joke about this, but it's good we joke about it because, when I talk to my wife, this might be personality type, it's drinking from the fire hose, as that happens, were you in the Saturday night class? Because I've had her, what do we call this event? She goes, she smiles and is drinking from the fire hose. So we talk about that. But the thing that I realized is that is very fulfilling to her to turn on fire hose. And, when I realized that, I'm glad to do that. But as a guy, we're not always... talking is not normally our thing. Well, is it? As a rule. We're generally our doers. I mean, there are exceptions. And so, I'm very thankful that when she wants to talk and share and... But see, here, listening, we tend to... We listen to a point that there's a problem, we go fix it. Let me go fix the problem. But what she needs is understanding first. And we can go work on problems. And that's the thing. I'll admit to you that I'm talking to the man who's got one or two problems and I'm starting to get tense. I've got to do this. I've got to do this. And I want to get up and go and do something. And so this is a difference in men and women. And but again, we need to learn how to understand. How do we show we've understood her? How do we show?
Not by talking.
Well, yeah. It depends, you know. Sometimes with me, did we have a bell ring? Second one ring? Okay. Well, appreciate the participation, and we'll continue with this, and appreciate the study. Thanks.